country's first emissions reduction plan, which was announced today, contained strategies, policies and actions for achieving our first emissions budget and contributing to global efforts to limit global temperature rise by 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. And the plan sees the government spending $2.9 billion of the $4.5 billion which has been set aside from the Climate Emergency Response Fund, that's over the next 4 years, funded through the Emissions Trading Scheme. It is a lengthy document, and to help us wade through some of the finer points is Massey University's sustainability expert, Emeritus Professor Ralph Sims. Kia ora, good evening, Ralph.
Kia ora, Karen.
Have you had a chance to digest this plan yet?
I haven't read every page of the 354, but I've certainly skimmed through it and got a reasonable idea of what it's all about, yes.
What was your initial reaction? Was it what you expected to hear?
Well, it's a plan that, when you said strategies, policies and action, it's certainly got a lot of strategies and policies, but probably not much action. It's good it draws on all the sectors of government. It's good it's got cross-party agreement from the parliamentary debate last week. It's good equality is taken into account. It mentions the co-benefits that come from reducing greenhouse gas emissions in many instances, which is often forgotten. It involves education, and that is key so people understand, including teaching in the schools. It's good research and development investment has gone up because New Zealand's been lagging that compared with OECD countries for some time. So it's going up to 2% of GDP, I think, eventually. So there's some real positives there, but it is a plan and it needs to be backed with action. And that's where there is a gap, I believe, in actually what's going to occur over the next few years.
Yeah, it's interesting that you said that because a lot of it reads like mission statements, doesn't it? Aspirational. And you think, wow, they haven't managed to do that to date. So how are they going to manage to do that in the very near future?
Well, this is right, and this is where the Climate Change Commission report, which advised government on this, did have some ideas, but also it's been talked about for a long time. And for example, there could be a regulation imposed tomorrow that said no new building, commercial or domestic, should have a gas connection, natural gas connection, because electricity is an alternative and natural gas is a greenhouse gas, and it's depleting anyway. We could ban coal exploration. When Labour government first came in, I think 2017, there was suddenly a policy, no more offshore oil and gas exploration, which was wonderful, hit the world headlines. Everybody thought, wow, this government's going to really do something, but not much has happened since. There's no restrictions on importing petrol, diesel cars after 2025 that the Climate Change Commission talked about and other countries are doing. So there's all sorts of opportunities which are sort of mentioned in there, and we might bring in a policy and we might have another look in a few years' time, year or two. So my overall guess is that we won't bend the curve on our annual greenhouse gas emissions very much over the next 2 to 3 years, maybe by the end of the first budget in 2025. Hopefully it'll be going down. But I think there's a lost opportunity on hitting the greenhouse gas emissions now.
Yes, and we had that IPCC report only last August, and we had UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres saying that that signalled, we all heard it, a code red for humanity. And the scientists who contributed to that report estimated that that 1.5 degrees Celsius will be reached by 2040, and they warned, as you've just said, that if emissions weren't slashed in the next few years, the tipping point's going to happen even earlier.
Yeah, well, that IPCC report was the adaptation report. There's since been another one just in the last 3 or 4 weeks that I've been involved with. That's my fifth IPCC report, I think. And basically saying the same thing we've been saying for 30 years or so about where to reduce emissions and how to do it, and it's, of course, becoming more urgent. So the IPCC is concerned, as is the United Nations Secretary General, that really things are happening too slowly. I made the comment earlier today that, you know, the Russian war in Ukraine is pretty terrible, but sooner or later it will end. climate change will continue. It won't end. It's locked in. We have to try and reduce its impacts, and we have to adapt to them, and we have to try and slow them down, which is what this plan is attempting to do. But is it going to be soon enough, given the report just recently on sea level rise and all the other issues which we will be impacted by in New Zealand as well as elsewhere in the world?
Still, there have to be some bold strokes and they have to start somewhere. So let's go through some of the key points of the plan, starting with transport. Electric vehicles today, they've had a lot of focus since the announcement earlier today. Are they going to be New Zealand's saviour?
Well, they will help. I mean, every petrol diesel car produces about 2 tonnes of CO2 per year on average. An electric vehicle, if it's charged using renewable electricity, produces much, much lower than that. I've got an electric vehicle. It's charged from my solar panels on the roof, and it costs me $2 to get from Palmerston North to Wellington in electricity that I would have sold to the grid otherwise. So here was an opportunity in the emission reduction plan to say every new building should have a solar panel and an electric vehicle charging point built into the building, and that was the sort of thing that would help. There are more electric chargers around the country being installed as part of this plan, and that's a good thing, but certainly it'll take a long, long time before we displace all the petrol diesel cars in New Zealand with electric vehicles, not to mention the trucks and the tractors and the diggers and everything else that runs on diesel and petrol.
And the public transport option in terms of improving travel choices and accessibility by providing people with more convenient, affordable and frequent buses and trains, as well as safer walkways and cycle lanes. We'd like that to happen immediately, wouldn't we?
Well, it is starting to happen because of the half-price fares as well. Of course, there has been an increase. But what's missing, and I did an analysis of this that was published in The Conversation, I travelled from my house in Palmerston North down to Wellington in a diesel car, electric car, a bus, a train and a plane, and I compared the cost, carbon, comfort and convenience of those different travel modes and how long it took to get down there. And the problem with the, this is intercity public transport, different to running around a city on a bus or a local train, but the problems we have are the convenience factor, the frequency, and getting to and from the station. So, you know, in Palmerston North, for example, the station's way outside the city and there's no shuttle bus or anything there, and therefore it's, you know, a taxi costs $30 to get there. And so, you know, it's that sort of part of public transport. We've got to look at the whole public transport system and improve on that, not just in putting more buses on. And the long distance buses, I mean, basic stuff, a lot of them don't have toilets on. And if you were an old man like me, then going 2 hours or 3 hours on a bus, you really want to sort of stop on the way. So there's room for improvement.
And when we're looking at the agricultural industry, there's some broad strokes there too. So what do you think their response will be to this?
Well, there's lots of debate and discussions with the agricultural industry and government on how they can reduce the agricultural emissions. There's a lot of misinformation too. Well, I think what we should remember is the New Zealand Greenhouse Gas Research Centre has been operating for, I think, nearly 10 years and had millions of dollars thrown at it for research to try and reduce biogenic methane from sheep, cattle, deer, etc. And we've now got under this plan a new Centre for Climate Action on Agricultural Emissions. So I'm not quite convinced that that's going to do anything more than what the Greenhouse Gas Emission Research Centre is already doing. But it's more research and putting more effort in. But it takes a long time for research to reach the commercialised practical stage. So we certainly need all the help we can get with agricultural emissions. And so hopefully throwing money at it will come up with some solutions, but after 10 years of pretty intensive research, by changing the feed of the animal, by the genes of the animal to be lower methane emitting, and by one or two other positive vaccinations have been looked at, really I don't think we're going to reduce the methane emission from a single animal by more than 5%, maybe 10% at the most. And so we have to have something much more drastic than that. And of course, then the argument is, have we got too many cows and too many sheep? And so that's another debate altogether, which wasn't in the emission reduction plan.
So much more to unpack. Well, thank you very much. We've just scratched the surface. I really appreciate you taking us there, Ralph. Thanks.
Okay, Karen. Thanks very much.
As Professor Ralph Sims